heroes of Israel, sometimes considered infamous leaders of Israel, a guy named Shimshon. Shimshon is the Hebrew name of Samson. And perhaps you've seen the plays, the operas, Samson and Delilah. You can rush out to the library and pick that up tomorrow. And poor Samson, most often gets a bum rap. He's considered a bad guy. He messes up. He struggles. Who of us don't? On the other hand, he was betrayed by his friends. One time, a group of Israelis tied him up to hand him over to the Philistines. They didn't like him. The Philistines wanted to kill him. And all the women in his life either abandoned him, ran off with some other guy, or wanted to manipulate Samson. Let's think a little more broadly instead of a flat caricature of a guy that struggles. As Rod said, he was a Nazir from his birth. Perhaps that was an extra layer of training in his life to help him deal with some of the lust issues that he had, some of the desires to demonstrate his strength, perhaps in ways he shouldn't. But it's interesting how God used even those weaknesses that Samson had, in order to, as Samson's parents were told, to begin to save the people of Israel. You see, the Philistines had come, and lately they had hounded the people of Israel, giving them a hard time for several decades, and no one had yet risen up to defend Israel from the Plishtim, from the Philistines. And so we read that they have troubled Israel for 40 years, and there is a birth. And I don't know how long we have to wait before Samson begins his mighty acts of valor for the sake of Israel. But here is Israel waiting for yet another judge. The judges are part teachers, part administrators, partly righteousness leaders for the people, leading them back to Torah. As well as defenders, military leaders. They come from different tribes within the people of Israel. Several you wouldn't even recognize their name if I told you. Others are more familiar. Gideon, Jephthah, Deborah, a woman. Interestingly enough, they lead Israel, defending Israel from their enemies. And at the same time, not only was it a good time when they would rise up and defend Israel from their enemies, but it was also the worst of times. The best of times and the worst of times. I think we've heard that. I think somebody else already took that phrase, so I'll have to not use that one in the first line of any of my books. It was the worst of times because we're told over and over and over some more that all of Israel did what was right in their own eyes. They let their eyes lead them. Samson had some of that same struggle. They let their eyes lead them. They all did right what was in their own eyes. And so this sets the stage for a lovely couple, a man named Manoach and his wife. We're not told in the text what his wife's name was, although, as usual, Jewish tradition fills that space in for us. Manoach and his wife are barren, although Manoach's name means rest, or you could literally think of it as mean Noach, from Noah. Of course, Noah's name is related to rest. Manoach had this... Stop. You try getting up and talking and see if you slip up and say something weird. So they deal with infertility. Infertility is actually an amazing theme that goes all the way back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 3. Because of the disobedience of Chava and Adam, the couples thereafter began to deal with infertility, with barrenness, among other results of disobedience. And this theme becomes something that all our ancestors, the Abrahams, the Isaacs, and their wives deal with. Amazingly, God steps in and overcomes and brings a miracle. And that is what's going to happen in Judges chapter 13. It's interesting, though, in Jewish tradition, we're told about a little debate that Manoach has with his wife. It seems not to be completely disruptive to their marriage, but we're told that Manoach blames, or doesn't blame, but says to his wife, you're the one that's infertile. While the wife turns to her husband, Manoach, and says, no, I think you're the one who is infertile. So they had this discussion, you see. One day, an angel appears to Manoach's wife and says something really amazing. Judges chapter 13, verse 3. An angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "You are barren, and you have borne no children." It's interesting that the angel comes and settles the dispute that they have. The rabbis posit that the Lord comes to the one who was wrong and corrects them, and instead of coming to the one who was right and defending the one who was right, the angel came to the one who was wrong and informed the lady, no, actually, you're the one who is barren. You're the one who is not able to have children. But your infertility will not be the end of the story. The sadness, the frustration, the attempt, the longing, the yearning will be resolved. The angel says, "But you will conceive and bear a son. Now be careful not to drink wine or other intoxicant or to eat anything unclean, for you are going to conceive and bear a son." It's interesting that the angel tells the woman, essentially, according to this week's Torah portion, you are to become a Nazir, a Nazirite. I was discussing this with Karen earlier this week, and she said, oh, you mean women could be a Nazir too? And I said, yeah, that's actually what the Torah portion, even in the book of Numbers, chapter 6, tells us. Men and women could be a Nazir. The angel comes to the woman and says, you are to become a Nazirite. Don't drink anything, as Rod said, that's related to wine. That would be as well as not any fermented grapes, but even fermented grain. No whiskey for Manoah's wife. And the angel says to her, regarding the son that was to be born, don't let a razor touch his head, for the boy is to be a Nazirite to God from the womb on, and he will be the first to deliver Israel from the Philistines. It's interesting that the word razor in the text is actually related to the word for fear. It looks like the word for fear as well. Not only should no razor come on his head, not only should his hair not be cut, but he is to have no fear on his head. He is to walk in the life, the power of God's Spirit. The woman went and told her husband, a man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God. Very awesome. I did not ask him where he was from, nor did he tell me his name. He said to me, you are going to conceive and bear a son. Don't drink any wine or other intoxicating beverage. Don't eat anything unclean, for the boy will be a Nazirite to God from the womb until the day of his death. I always enjoy exploring speeches in the Torah. When God, or in this case an angel, says something to someone and they relate the speech to somebody else. It's interesting to see what the woman didn't tell her husband and the additions that she made to what God said. For instance, she didn't tell her husband any of the part about the angel telling her that she's the barren one. She let that go. She seemed to have forgiven her husband for this antagonizing kind of, oh, you're the barren one. No, you're the infertile one. Of course, they didn't have medical science that we have today to set those things straight. God came and set it straight. And she dropped it. She didn't take it to her husband and say, you know, well, you know, okay, I guess I found out the truth. You know, I might find something else to be upset about now. She dropped the issue. She didn't tell her husband that part of the angel's speech. She simply said that we are going to conceive. We're going to have a baby. Woohoo! It's interesting that she also doesn't tell her husband the purpose for this baby. The angel had said he is going to be a Nazir, and the purpose of this is that he is going to begin the process of redemption for Israel. Interestingly, she didn't tell her husband that part. It's kind of like how Miriam, the mother of another miracle son, we're told, pondered these things in her heart. She didn't go around talking about them. She pondered these things in her heart. Mary had been told that your son will be the cause of the rising of many in Israel. Unfortunately, it says the falling of many in Israel as well. But then Miriam was also told, and the sword will come to your heart as well. What could Miriam have thought? I mean, my son's going to be this one who, by the way, will also, as they were told, your son will also redeem Israel. The same thing that Manoah's wife was told, your son will begin to redeem Israel from their enemies. So this son that was to be born to Miriam, this son will also begin to redeem Israel from their sins. This sword pierced Mary's heart, would pierce Mary's heart, she was told by the prophet. But yet she simply pondered these things in her heart. Manoah pleaded with the Lord, saying, "Oh, my Lord, please let the man of God that you sent come again and let him instruct us on how to act with the child that is to be born." And we're told God heard Manoah's prayer. And the angel of the Lord came to the woman again. Did you catch that? Is that only ironic to me? The husband says, "God, I need a little clarification on that message from my wife. Would you please send that man of God again? I'd really like more information." And God said, "Sure, I'll answer that prayer." And so he sent the angel to the woman a second time. Although that's ironic, Manoah doesn't bear a grudge. He doesn't get jealous. He doesn't get angry. He could, according to Numbers chapter 30, he could have told her, "Well, that Nazirite vow that you think you're supposed to take, well, I, as your husband, have the authority to nix that vow." It's interesting he doesn't do that. We're told that men and women could take a Nazirite vow, but later in the book of Numbers, husbands can negate their wives' vows. He doesn't do it. He doesn't seem jealous that the angel comes to her the first time. He doesn't get angry that the angel comes to her the second time. But note what she does. She was sitting in a field, and her husband Manoah was not with her that day the angel came a second time. And we're told three verbs. The woman hurried, and she ran, and she told. She hurried, and she ran, and she told her husband. She said to him, "The man who came to me before, on a different day, has appeared to me again." She doesn't go in and say, "Nana, nana, boo, boo. I'm so special. I'm the Nazir and you're not." Do you notice how they endear themselves to one another? They have different roles. They even, if you read through the rest of the text, you even find out they're on different spiritual planes. The woman is perceived and presented as more perceptive than she in the dialogue that they have with the angel. But he does not express anger. He does not express jealousy. He does not express contempt. He doesn't find a way to exalt himself. And at the same time, she serves him, takes a role in deference to him, even though she is more the Nazir. She's more spiritually perceptive. in the conversation with the angel, Manoach makes a number of requests and asks a number of questions, all of which the angel defers and says, well, it's really inappropriate. And then the woman explains to him why it was inappropriate. But yet, she is kind-hearted. She hurries and she runs to get her husband. She knows her husband made this cry, God, bring that angel back again. She wants to include him. She hurries, she runs, she tells her husband. The man who came to me before has appeared to me again. And Manoach promptly followed after his wife. And he came and they have the conversation. And the angel confirms the woman, what the woman has said to you is true. The woman must abstain from all these things which I warned her. She's not to eat of anything that comes from the vine. And drink any wine or other intoxicating drink or eat anything unclean. She must observe everything I command her. And we're told in verse 24 that the woman conceived a son and she named him Shimshon. It's related to the Hebrew word for the sun, Shemesh. She has a son named Shimshon, and the boy grew up, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord moved him in the camps of Dan between Zora and Eshtaol. It's very similar language to another young miracle baby. We're told in Luke chapter 2 about a miracle baby named Yeshua who grew up and became strong. And the Lord's mercy was on him. It's interesting to me in reflecting on this marriage between Manoach and his wife that they reflect the ideal of Genesis chapter 2. It says that Adam and Eve, at the end of Genesis chapter 2, were naked, and they were not ashamed, is the usual translation. Adam and Eve were naked, and they were not ashamed, end of chapter 2. However, the phrase at the end is much better translated, they didn't shame each other. They didn't shame each other. The verb there for shame is actually in the reflexive. It's not that they didn't feel any shame. It's that they didn't lord it over the other. They didn't embarrass the other. They didn't do anything to make the other look awkward. They didn't shame each other. It brings to light a whole deeper level to that relationship that Genesis chapter 2 is trying to express between the man and the woman. Unfortunately, when chapter 3 in Genesis arrives, they start shaming each other. But that's a different sermon. In closing, I thought of a passage in Philippians chapter 2 that expresses the kind of marriage relationship that it seems that Mr. Rest, Manoach, and his wife had. Philippians chapter 2 says, if there is any encouragement in Messiah, if there is any comfort of love, if there is any kesher, any fellowship of the Spirit, if there is any mercy and compassion, then make my joy complete by being four things of the same mind, having the same love, being united in spirit with one purpose. Four things demonstrate unity. Four things demonstrate unity in a congregation, in a family, between spouses. They are being like-minded, having the same mind, having the same love, being united in spirit with a single purpose, with a common destiny. Verses 3 and 4 go on to highlight not only what should exist in the abstract, having the same love, the same spirit, the same purpose, but then it goes on to talk about behavior. Verse 3, it says, "Don't do anything out of selfishness or conceit, but with humility consider the other one better and more important than yourself." The woman, Manoach's wife, was the Nazir. She was going to have a son who would be a Nazir. But yet she hurried, she ran, she told her husband. There was not a heart of selfishness. There was not a heart of pride within her. Do nothing out of selfishness and conceit, but with humility, with the attitude of a servant, especially the attitude of servant Messiah. Consider others even more important than yourself. And then look out not only for your own interest, but also the interest of others. It's not saying that your stuff isn't important. It's saying your spouse's stuff is important too. Don't look out only for your own interest, but become a champion of the interests of your spouse. Become the hero for that husband or wife. Become, again, a servant to the other. It's not that so-called self-esteem is bad. It's that self-esteem is perfected as we serve and love and stand united with each other. I pray that Messiah will teach us in our relationships, both corporately as a congregation, but even in our families, in our marriages, that God's Spirit would teach us how to have the kind of attitude that Manoach's wife had.